This is an MP3 audio clip from the weekly People First radio broadcast.
CHLY 101.7 FM, Vancouver Island. On the web, www.chly.ca.
Guatemala is a nation of about 13 million people, including a sizable population of indigenous Mayan people, including the MAM. After decades of civil war and military dictatorship in Guatemala, a peace accord was signed in 1996. But the country is anything but peaceful. A United Nations body was set up in 2007 to help Guatemala's judiciary, which is riddled with corruption. The country's judiciary, along with its military and police, have been infiltrated by drug trafficking groups. Guatemala is considered to be a major transit route for cocaine going from Colombia to the United States.
Kit Pepper lives on Gabriola Island and works in the Faculty of Education at Vancouver Island University's Nanaimo campus. She volunteered in 2006 with a group called Alianza, a project which responds to grassroots requests for education and health care from the local MAM-speaking women and men of Comitanchilo and surrounding rural areas in Guatemala. Her experiences led to her new book of poetry called Let Beauty Be, A Season in the Highlands, Guatemala.
Kit Pepper joins us in the studio. Welcome, Kit. Tell us what brought you to Guatemala.
Well, I was on a deferred salary leave from work and looking around for a place to go to volunteer. Then I met Rebecca Shoup, a local Nanaimo woman who had been down there and initiated, set up, and established this amazing organization called Alianza, a very, very front lines operation devoted to health and education for the local MAM-speaking people. And it was through her that I went to Comitancio.
And how did the book begin to emerge from your experiences there?
Well, that's a great way to ask that question, because it literally did unintentionally, unexpectedly emerge. I carried in my pocket a little notebook that that was to gather my Spanish words as I was trying to learn the language. And as I went on the runs, I just started to note things down in that notebook. And I was going for my runs every day in the morning before it got too hot. And I'd come home and look through the notebook again, and then the poems just started to actually emerge in that way. This is an excerpt from day four, the fourth day that I've been doing these runs. Many trees, almost familiar, arbutus-like, near alder and pine. Schoolboys greet us and practice their English, goodbye, instead of hello. Today I count six switchback turns in La Gruta's upper section. Cold wind courses like a white water river, eddies of garbage, rocks leaping in front of me like frogs. I start jogging and a raven imitates a pager, but there is no fire hall or clinic down here, far below Comitancio. Just the same campesinos in their fields, daily emergencies, planting and hoeing, and for me, these morning runs. A finch launches a song from a limb and I pass Tienda Gabriel, then the cornmill. Today, an adobe home with a painted door is as far as I can go. Teal, green, and yellow, a carved quetzal bird on top. Let beauty be the marker, I decide, the moment to turn.
Tell us about La Gruta.
Yes, La Gruta. La Gruta was a crevice, a gorge, a slash in the side of the plateau where the town rested, the town of Comitancio. It was incredibly steep. It was a temple-steep incline, and I'm sure in North America it would be fenced off and decided that it was unsafe. But it was the way to get off the plateau to the road, which followed the river along which I ran every morning, or most mornings. My experience of La Gruta was mostly about sweat and pounding hearts and near exhaustion.
You also referred to La Gruta as a mystery at one point. as a goddess
yes.
in another part of the poem.
I think so many things in Guatemala, in Comitancillo, were more than they actually were. And my experience or my relationship with her, I perceived her sometimes as a mother also. The relationship changed all the time, and it was just levels and layers of complexity.
And as I read, I found also there was a considerable amount of ascending and descending going on.
Absolutely. And for me, when I wrote the book, and even now going back and reading it, it is ascent and descent, literal, just ascent and descent. Friends have told me that that stands very symbolically in the book, in the work, in the ideas. But for me, I just remember how my heart almost jumped out of my throat. It was such a hard climb. And a descent was... could trick you. It felt easy until you got to the bottom and felt the pain in your knees and things like that. This is from day 7. I set off and a raven calls Tichikiki. Two mom-speaking women sit on the roadside grass, black hair held back by beaded barrettes, stained glass rosettes, the sun full on, long hair shimmering, the sheen of morning. Today I find a shard, black and metallic, stamped into the earth. It could be shrapnel, a piece of bullet. Not long ago, these highlands, hiding places and killing grounds. 200,000 Maya gone, dead or disappeared. Hundreds of villages flattened. Only 10 years since the peace accords. 10 years so far to reforest these highlands, to replenish swaths of scorched earth with cypress and pine. Beauty almost doesn't get a chance today. Snarling dogs lunge from the steps of an evangelical church. I bend, pretend to find a rock, mock fearlessness. Someone up the hillside orders them away, tails tucked, the dogs retreat. I push on, determined, farther or faster each day. Then I stumble down another descent, an astonishing feat, this second plunge of land to yet a deeper valley. In war years, guerrillas nimbled across these fissures in the dark, without flashlight or fire. Afternoons in my backyard, big-bellied hummingbirds thrust their tongues to the core of red and purple coneflowers, while over the cinder block wall, draped in a crook of a peach tree, a dead squirrel, like a garbage bag snagged in the branches, wind-blown and ragged.
Tell us a bit more about the political turmoil in Guatemala and some of the effects you observed that it's had on the people who live there.
Well, it's a very hard thing to ask and for me to respond as an outsider. I think all I can do is tell you sort of the facts, and then you can surmise some things. And the things that I know are, for instance, in 54, the government tried to nationalize the huge holding of the United Fruit Company and to turn it back to the people. And under the name of anti-communism, the U.S. stepped in and tried to squash that whole enterprise. And then in half a decade, fighting started. So I think in that half a decade, while the fighting was waiting to start, things were just brewing and festering like a tornado kind of gathering its force. And then there were over three and a half decades of terrible, terrible oppression and fighting and maiming and killing and raping and fires across villages. So the people have lived with that for all these years, and it's, you know, it's ever present. It's ever present, the impact. And you can only just imagine that it's in the smallest detail, the smile, the tears behind the smiles, for instance.
You're listening to People First Radio on CHLY 1017, CHLY.ca. I'm Kevin. I'm here with Jan. We're joined in the studio by poet and writer Kit Pepper, who is reading from and speaking about her recent book. The series of linked poems is called Let Beauty Be, A Season in the Highlands, Guatemala.
There are two quotes at the start of your book. One of them, by Stephen Levine, says, "Grief is the rope burns left behind when that which is held is pulled beyond our grasp. I know very few people who are not grieving at some level. Feelings of loss don't go away, they go deeper." What does the book have to say about grief, and whose grief is it?
Whose grief is it? Such a good question. My first response is that it's everyone's grief and no one's grief all at the same time. I think grief manifests in Guatemala in all kinds of inexplicable and surprising ways. I think it's the soil manifests grief in its infertility and then the harsh chemicals, fertilizers that are placed upon the soil. I think the trucks that carry the workers to the fincas and return scabby infested workers back from the fincas hold grief. I think mothers who can't get their children medical attention are grieving. The fathers who can't send their kids to school, the kids who desperately want an education and have to go instead to the capital to work or to the fincas to work, those children can't play or run. So there's just grief everywhere. And I actually, when I think about it, there has to be grief. There's so much damage. The cruelty moved from, and I do say somewhere in the book that it moved from dictators to soldiers to a deeply wounded people. And I, in the middle of that is also the link of the reputedly volunteer citizen patrol people, so where the military convinced the peasants to turn upon themselves. Mm-hmm. Tremendous grief when your own turns on you. This is an excerpt from day 9. The road is in the shade, and I step right away into a rhythm. These mornings, more reverie than run. Here babies don't walk until 2 years old. often they never crawl, wrapped onto someone's back, past sibling to sibling, away from steep cliffs, muddy slopes. This land insists itself, contours people's lives, my life here in these highlands. A man stands beside a felled cypress tree. Like everyone, he greets me. Around the bend, a young boy, also with a brimming smile, horse, and two side sacks of corn. Early morning companions with whom I share this world. I pass a tiny elderly woman, hands clasped together, she beams. She's Mother Teresa and the midday sun combined. My Spanish greeting is inadequate. Too late, I wished I'd given the Maya greeting for adults. Right palms touch, then slide off. Each hand rises vertically to one's own forehead. Today, the Chichel is back to its clear color. No snarling dogs.
Could you share more of your experience with of the people during your experience there?
Okay. It's hard to generalize. For instance, I had a landlady and a landlord, and they were like landladies and landlords. One thing I can tell you is their lives are very different. Rebecca asked one of her workers what would he like to do in his life, and the look he gave her would be the look I would give you if you asked me, when do I plant my corn? That question was just, that's such a North American question, I guess. It just had no meaning for Carlos at that moment in his life. The lives are restricted. It's such a hard life with the poverty. But the people I did come to know a little bit through Rebecca's clinic, the Alianza, people, Sophia, Magnolia, Carlos, Freddy, I would say they have incredible resistance, given the decades of trauma they have faced individually and as families. Very resourceful.
One thing that struck me as I was reading your book was the reference to the greetings that are given. Mm-hmm. And I think at one point you actually counted and you received 36 greetings in
That's
1 hour.
Right. As if the air itself spoke. And Kevin, you had a really interesting impression of the Buddha dog, the dog who has the rope tied under his neck. You thought that perhaps someone had put that rope and the rock around his neck and threw him into the water. I don't know if that's true. That could be, maybe not. But for me, it is symbolic of these people. If I do want to generalize, the resilience is amazing. The parents are devoted to their children, want the best for them in terms of education especially, and do their most to get the health care they can. In general, there are still over 20 Mayan languages, and that's amazing given the centuries of exploitation and colonization.
Let's hear a little more about the Buddha dog.
So this is an excerpt from day 18. Today I walk through town with Robert. We pass the dog with the rock strapped around its neck. Robert tells me he has named this dog the Buddha of Comitancio and is determined to cut off the rock before he leaves. We place biscuits in front of this sad-eyed Buddha. He gets up and trots away, hunched as if on tiptoes, hobbled by the neck-slung weight. Stark ribs and red-shot eyes. Is he the official bearer of suffering in this town? Cruelty has changed hands here like a switchback road, from dictators to soldiers to a deeply wounded people. Why would a dog be spared? Last night, to silence his crying puppy, a toddler swung his stubby leg into its belly. The thump of contact, the yelp of pain. Hey, I yelled. Remnants of sorrow. Do people ever rid themselves of suffering?
Well, now, Kit, you have to tell us about the Buddha dog.
In many Central American towns, there are many, many feral dogs. In this town, there were a number of dogs who had a paw tied up around their neck. And one dog, this one particular dog that we named the Buddha dog, had a large rock on a rope around its neck. So that's literally who the Buddha dog was in the town.
Why the paw?
I don't know. I don't know. I never found that out.
Kit, you also spoke, you shared a quote about suffering from Ruby as she rolled a 3-day-old infant into your arms. And Ruby was sobbing as she said, "A woman's life is nothing more than sorrow and suffering."
So I think Ruby at that point just was feeling the impact of having another child, especially a daughter, and having a husband who, as I say in the book, who had just fathered another child with another woman 2 weeks before. Ruby wasn't working. There was just despair at that moment, what mm-hmm. to do. Mm-hmm. And the daughter was a beautiful daughter.
Kit Pepper, we only have a moment left in our time with you today. Is there anything else that you'd like to add?
I think as much as there's annihilation in the country, there's so much animation. Inanimate things were animated down there when you least expected it. In the quotation I read earlier about the rocks leaping like frogs, that's an example. There were times when I'd see mango pits on the roadside and they would look like furry animals. Shower heads were live. We got jabbed by jolts of electricity from shower heads. So you just never knew what was alive and what was resting.
Quite a powerful experience.
Absolutely.
And we'd really like to thank you, Kit, for taking the time to come and share your poetry with us. And it's been very pleasurable.
And the pleasure is mine. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Kit Pepper is the author of Let Beauty Be, A Season in the Highlands, Guatemala. The book has just been published by Leaf Press. Copies are available at Falconer Books in Nanaimo at the Port Place Shopping Center, on Gabriola at the Old Bookshop at Twin Beaches and Pages Marina, and also at chapters.ca online. For more information about Kit's book, visit leafpress.ca.
People First Radio is an initiative of Colombian Center Society in partnership with Radio Malaspina Society's CHLY 101.7 FM, CHLY.ca, community radio from Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily of these organizations.